We're discussing conditions at the U.S.-Mexico border and efforts by the Biden administration to reverse Trump-era policies. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House must decide whether to extend restrictions on non-essential travel set to expire next week. The public health program, it's called Title 42. It was put in place under the Trump administration to expel migrants attempting to make a border crossing. And from last October through May, Border Patrol has expelled nearly 648,000 migrants under Title 42 at the Southwest border. That's from the agency's data. Do you feel the Biden administration is doing enough to address the root causes of migration? How do you feel about Title 42 expulsions? 800-642-1234. Aaron Barbado directs the UW Law School's Immigrant Justice Clinic. Aaron, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. I understand you recently returned from the border. Where did you go? What were conditions like where you were?
Sure. So we, with a few of my colleagues, we traveled to the southern border, actually to El Paso, where there is a child detention center located at the Fort Bliss military base. Mm-hmm. We travel there to work with the children that are detained there. We did sign an NDA, so there's not a lot of information I can provide that isn't public. But the information that is public is that there are about 3,000 children under the age of 18 that are detained there, most of them seeking protection in the United States and looking to unite with family members or close friends that are willing and ready to care for them. About 80 to 90% of them have people in the United States that are ready to care for them while they seek asylum or other legal remedies in the United States. But they are there detained for upwards of 2 months in a temporary, what's called an emergency intake site that doesn't have the protections that most of the long-term child detention centers have that are operated by Office of Refugee Resettlement.
What was your role in traveling there? What were you doing there?
Well, I was there as my role as a professor and someone who studies immigration laws. I wanted to see for firsthand what was going on. But I also have myself and my colleagues have particular skills that are helpful in working with children that are seeking refuge in the United States. In Wisconsin, we represent a lot of children that are seeking asylum or something called special immigrant juvenile status. And so going to a place where there are about 3,000 people, children that are detained, we're able to provide some legal orientation and information to the children that are detained there. And we worked with an organization called KIND, Kids in Need of Defense.
Had conditions changed since your last visit?
My understanding is that they are pretty much the same. Vice President Harris visited the detention center the week after I was volunteering there. And, you know, I think there are efforts to make things better there, but it's children in detention. And I think that that is maybe an impossible feat to make it safe for 3,000 children that are in a temporary detention center during a pandemic.
Do you know whether COVID vaccines had made it to this detention center, this emergency intake site?
You know, I'm not sure I can disclose any of that information.
Okay. You know, there's a study published this week out of UCLA that finds migrant detained children in the U.S., they're not guaranteed access to health care and schooling. And it found that we lag behind dozens of wealthy nations in our treatment of immigrant children who are detained. And we don't have explicit federal laws that limit the detention of these unaccompanied migrant children. What is your sense on this research, on these findings?
You know, I think the findings are correct. We are detaining children without enough protection, and we've been doing that for many years. It got much worse under the Trump administration. We even, by closing our borders to children that were seeking refuge in the United States, made it even more dangerous for children because they were forced to remain in Mexico or in other countries where they were not safe. You know, the Biden administration making an exception to the unaccompanied minors, children under 18 that are traveling without a biological parent, was the right decision. But the right decision is not to keep them in detention for these long periods of time. We want them to be reunited with family members or have a safe place to live. And these emergency intake sites are simply not safe. We don't have enough resources there to truly care for a child. And as a developed nation with so many resources, we can be doing so much better.
We're talking with Erin Barbado, who's director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School, talking about her recent trip to El Paso to an emergency intake site. As we look at immigration policy going forward in the Biden administration, with your questions, 800-642-1234. Erin, I don't know how you can approach this question, but I want to ask it. Did you hear babies and children crying, and were they being consoled, or were they left to cry alone?
So I can't answer that question directly, but there are different types of emergency intake sites and different types of children detention centers. Mm-hmm. And there are detention centers that are specifically for tender age children. Those are children under the age of 13 and even sometimes younger. They have specific places that they will be placed and not necessarily in these larger detention centers on the border.
I would imagine beyond the psychological trauma that the health risks are high for children detained in really cramped quarters. What were the health conditions like where you were?
You know, I can't talk too much to what I personally observed, but mm-hmm. there are some public information that discusses that there are mental health services available, but there's definitely a need for more mental health services at these places.
Well, when you look at Central America's Northern Triangle, really concerning, the Council on Foreign Relations says more than 2 million people are estimated to have left El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras since 2014, many of them fleeing poverty, violence, climate catastrophes. Do you think there will be a whole generation of children without the ability to escape poverty, without the ability to escape violence, and that this instability that you're seeing, that it will worsen?
You know, I certainly hope not. I hope that the United States can return to using policies that are used to help kind of cure some of these push factors that are causing children and families to make a dangerous journey to our southern border. But we are not helping at this point. Under the Obama administration, we had made some progress into initiating policies that will, defeat some of the gang control and the domestic violence that's so pervasive in these countries. But until we have a more humane asylum system where the message is clear about who will qualify and who won't, and also taking ownership of some of the contributions we have in the instability of some of these countries, we have a lot of work to do, and it may take many years to get there. But with the right policies and investment, I think we can make huge changes for the better.
Erin Barbado directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School. You can join in. What policies do you think should be implemented on seeking asylum in the U.S.? How do you feel about the work of ICE agents? What policies do you want the Biden administration to focus on with pathways to citizenship? Join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Erin Barbado on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on U.S. immigration policy and pathways to citizenship on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Biden administration has tried to renew visa and refugee programs that were cut or suspended under the Trump administration. Roughly 11 million undocumented immigrants live in limbo in the U.S. And according to the American Immigration Council, Wisconsin is home to thousands of DACA recipients, the program protecting undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children. Are you a DACA beneficiary? What would you like to say? 800-642-1234. Erin Barbado directs the UW Immigrant Justice Clinic, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Gianni is joining us from Montello. Hi, Gianni. What would you like to ask?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. perhaps correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard a news report that the Biden administration is now telling Cubans and Haitians that if they should they arrive in the United States, that they would be repatriated back to their countries. And I'm thinking, isn't this a great inconsistency since the Biden administration has relaxed laws and immigration policy concerning Mexico and Central America? I see an inconsistency here.
Jenny, thank you. Aaron.
Jenny, that's a great question. And I think there is a lot of confusion about specifically what is going on in Cuba and Haiti and whether people will be seeking refuge in the United States. The work that I do at the Immigrant Justice Clinic, we often represent people from Cuba who are have made the journey to our southern border and then are placed in detention in Wisconsin. And we help them through the asylum process. Yesterday, what was announced was that Cubans and Haitians that were seeking refuge by boat would not be able to seek asylum in the United States. Now, if they arrive at a land border entry, most likely going to be in Mexico, then they would be eligible to possibly apply for asylum if they can establish a credible fear of return to their home country. But there was definitely an announcement by Mayorkas yesterday.
Homeland Secretary. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes, discouraging people from traveling to the United States by boat. And there's a good reason for that, because it can be very dangerous. But I think it also ignores the extreme danger that people are facing in their home countries. And, you know, you never get into a boat unless it's safer than on land.
I want to turn to Title 42 for a moment, allowing border agents to turn away migrants, expel them. What kinds of public health rules did the Trump administration put in place?
Right. So on March 20th of 2020, the Department of Health and Human Services, under the direction of former President Trump, initiated a Title 42, which closed our southern border to basically everybody except for U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents, and their families. The idea was that this, by closing our southern border, we would protect the United States from the pandemic, even though most evidence shows that we, as the United States, helped transmit the pandemic to the global south, including through our deportation process. But we closed our southern border to asylum seekers. Under Title 42. So for more than a year, people who are seeking asylum, some with very strong cases for asylum, have been unable to seek asylum in the United States under our laws.
And the Biden administration has continued Title 42.
Correct. The Biden administration has continued Title 42. There have been a few exceptions, a few that I talked about before, at least one of them, to the Title 42, really recognizing some of the most vulnerable people that are arriving at our southern border, including unaccompanied minors, including people that were forced to remain in Mexico on the migrant protection protocols. Some people who have been seeking asylum and were forced to remain in Mexico for years. And then there's been a small process for a few families that are particularly vulnerable, have been able to work with certain nonprofit agencies to petition in a very difficult process to enter the United States if they can prove they are particularly vulnerable, which many families who are seeking asylum, who are living in some of these border towns on the other side of our southern border, are should qualify for.
So just for clarification, Title 42 affecting children, are children then exempt from Title 42? Can you put some clarity on that?
Sure, exactly. So under the Trump administration, there were no exemptions to Title 42 expulsions for children, unaccompanied minors. But President Biden did initiate exemptions to Title 42 for unaccompanied minors. So we saw in March a large number of unaccompanied minors be permitted to enter the United States to seek asylum. And there was a lot of pent up need, because for many years, not just under Title 42, but under other policies, including the migrant protection protocols and other agreements with Mexico, children were not able to lawfully seek asylum in the United States because they were often turned around. Mm. So this is the first time in many years that the children have been able to enter the United States to seek asylum in a more humane process and as permitted under the laws of the United States.
What is the timeline for perhaps phasing out this rule?
You know, it's a very good question. I don't have the answers. There are some rumors going on from some particularly trusted authorities, but it looks like by the end of the summer, Title 42 should be phased out. It may be phased out in steps, including looking at the most vulnerable people first, women and children, and then expanding it to families and then to other asylum seekers.
We're talking with Erin Barbado, who directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School, as we discuss immigration policy going forward in the Biden administration. With your insights, are you an immigrant? What has your experience been like of becoming a citizen? What was that pathway? 800-642-1234. Erin, circling back to children, you know, the Department of Homeland Security says more than 80% of the migrating and asylum-seeking children taken into U.S. custody and initiating immigration cases in our country, they already have family members living in the U.S. What do you see the administration doing to reunite children with their families here in the U.S.?
You know, in my opinion, the intention is good. They want to make sure that the children are reunited with people that are truly family members and truly people that are safe for the children to be living with. We don't want to have any child trafficked, and there is certainly the trafficking of children in the United States. So we want to be really cognizant of that danger. That being said, there are not enough resources in terms of caseworkers that are working to reunite these children with family members in an expeditious manner while making sure that the children are protected, but making sure that the children are not in these detention facilities for longer than needed. We work with reuniting some of the family children with their family members and assisting in that process. And it, in my opinion, I just think we need more resources to help these caseworkers and have more caseworkers that know what they are doing to make sure this is an expeditious process and safe for the children.
How difficult has it been to track down family members of these children?
You know, the families that we've worked with, it hasn't been quite that difficult. It's okay. Just a long process because of the background checks that many of the sponsors, the family members, have to go through. But any day is too long for a child to be in detention. And it's really quite heartbreaking. And after the children have gone through so much, they being with a family member, I think, would alleviate a lot of their emotional harm and allow them to start to heal from the trauma. But being in a detention center in the United States as a child may increase some of that those traumas that these children have already experienced.
What might the background checks entail? Like, how extensive are they? And what would they prove?
They will prove that they're the person that they are. So they'll check the identity of the individual to ensure that the sponsor has a safe place for the child to live. They'll check the criminal backgrounds of individuals to ensure that they are a safe person for the child to live with. And sometimes just getting the documents together and sometimes fingerprints are necessary, so those can take a little bit. So it's a lot of documentary evidence. And doing this during a pandemic when people can't necessarily work in the same place is an additional burden to the process.
Well, I think I know the answer to this question, but how great is the need for attorneys in immigration law? How much access do they have to people who can help them through the legal process?
Yeah, I mean, that goes to one of the core issues relating to immigration law in the United States, and especially to children, that, you know, people in a deportation process or seeking asylum, they aren't afforded a government-paid attorney if they cannot afford one to hire a private bar attorney or find a pro bono attorney. And so many of these children go without representation, which is not the way that this country should work. Every child should have representation, especially when they're fleeing persecution and need safety. I'm hoping that one day that will happen. But until that happens, so many children go without representation and access to justice.
At the intake center where you were in El Paso, does the census, did the number of children there stay pretty consistent, or is it going down?
You know, my understanding from public record is that the number was higher in March, went down a little bit in June, and now is back to about 3,000 children.
Erin Barbado, she directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School. What policies do you think should be implemented on seeking asylum here in the U.S.? How do you feel about the Biden administration's policies to date? Are you a dreamer? What would you like to say about the pathway to citizenship? How has the immigration crisis affected you and your family? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Erin Barbado after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we discuss U.S. immigration policy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last month, Vice President Kamala Harris made her first diplomatic trip to Mexico and Guatemala, addressing migrants directly.
I want to be clear to folks in this region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border. Do not come. Do not come.
What can you share about how immigration policies are affecting your family? 800-642-1234. Erin Barbado is director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School and stays with us. Erin, what do you think about Harris's message in Guatemala?
You know, that message, I think, was really short-sighted in a lot of ways. While I understand that she doesn't want people to make a dangerous journey unnecessarily, I think it ignores the fact that people are leaving not because of choice, but because of situation and that they have no other option. People don't make that trek to the United States just for fun. They're doing it because they have no other option. And by making a statement of do not come, we're ignoring the truth of the situation that people are truly being persecuted and live in danger on a daily basis.
What did she do instead there? I mean, has she made any inroads since she was appointed to this role, Biden designating her to lead regional diplomacy there, you know, curbing migration to the U.S. southern border?
You know, curbing migration to the southern border is going to take a lot more than words. It's going to take a lot more look at the push factors that are going on. And words aren't going to change those push factors. We have to, as a country, as a whole, we have to really invest and study and be thoughtful about what we're doing there and how we're treating people arriving in the United States. We are not treating people who are seeking refuge with dignity. And making statements like that makes it even more difficult for people that may not understand the asylum process or the push factors to understand why we have asylum and why we have an asylum process.
Explain what you mean by the push factors. What are they?
You know, the push factors that we see in a lot of the people that we serve, specifically from, you know, we serve people from all over the world. Political situations in certain countries have made it incredibly difficult for people to stay and be safe in those countries. You know, Cuba in particular, we see a lot of asylum seekers from Cuba, but we also look at Nicaragua and other countries in Central America where the government is unable and at times unwilling to control some of these pervasive gangs that control many of the countries. And they target families and children, which is a huge push factor. You have no option but to leave. If someone in a gang says, you need to join our gang and you need to start helping us with our criminal activity, and a child says no, oftentimes they're threatened with their life. the government is unable to protect that child in that situation. The child has no other option but to flee the country and seek refuge in another place. If we're not looking at those push factors, we're never going to help those countries be safer and be more autonomous.
And this is not just Central America here. There is a rise in immigrants from India, from Turkey, from Russia, from Romania. Why might you be seeing more migrants from countries all over the world seeking entrance through the southern border?
It may be the only place that people can find refuge. And we serve people from, you know, as I said, all over the world, from Cameroon, from India, from China. Our asylum laws are there for a reason, because we recognize that there are certain countries where people may be unsafe because of their political opinion, their race, their nationality, or their membership in a particular social group. So when we look at the world and we see that there are truly areas where there are inhumane policies against a certain group of people, those people are probably going to flee, and they may seek refuge in other places. We do not house refugees in the United States. They are housed in a lot of developing countries in the world. So people may seek refuge here, but many seek refuge in other countries as well.
So when you look at the next steps, and for the Biden administration, and you look from where we have been, like in 2018, the Trump administration having a zero tolerance policy, where are we at right now with immigration policy under the Biden administration?
You know, when I talk about this, I often talk about how Trump built a wall, not a physical wall, but built a policy wall specifically in front of asylum seekers. The policy wall barred people all across the immigration system, including employment-based visas and employment-based immigrant visas, as well as separated a lot of families for too long, even though that they were lawfully able to petition for that family member to come to the United States. But Trump built an incredibly powerful policy wall through executive actions and policies and rules. But there was no change in the laws through the legislature. It was mostly through the power of the executive. Mm-hmm. And we have seen, thankfully, under the Biden administration, some change. And it's been very thoughtful changes that are targeting the most vulnerable people that have been placed in danger through the wall, that the policy wall that the Trump administration built. But it's moving pretty slowly. And I think we even look at not only the asylum process and how many people are still not allowed to seek asylum under Title 42 expulsions, but and are expelled if they do try to seek asylum. But we also see it the ramifications in even our DACA population, that many of them are waiting too long to receive benefits and to renew their work permits. So there's movement, I believe, in the right direction, but I think there's a need for so much more effort, and Congress needs to act in order to correct a lot of the errors of the past, and so that we don't return to a system that truly punishes people simply because they are seeking refuge or because they were born in another country.
We're going to talk about DACA here in a moment. We're with Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School, as we look at immigration policy, debates around it. What kinds of policies are you looking for on immigration? What kinds of rules would you like to see enforced at the southern border? 800-642-1234. We heard from Mary in Stevens Point, called in to say, Aaron, Mary is concerned about the level of immigrants crossing the border illegally. Mary doesn't like that U.S. resources are being spent to support them. What would you say to Mary?
You know, I think it's a good question. I think it's a concern for a lot of people, mostly because there are words that are used at our southern border in terms of people say there's a surge or there's a crisis. I mean, in all reality, these are human beings that are seeking refuge. And we look at historical numbers, they're not incredibly high right now. And I think people are scared because there's incorrect information out there. The seeking asylum is legal. seeking asylum, whether presenting yourself on the southern border or whether crossing the border without inspection, and then asking for asylum once you're in the United States, those are all permissible under our laws. Our laws that were written in a direct reaction to our failure and the world's failure to protect people in World War II, especially sending people back to Nazi Germany and to being persecuted. So our laws are written to protect people. We don't want to ever expel somebody back to torture or persecution. And I think that has become very muddy in the waters in terms of the messaging that has come across from the media at times. And so I think we all need to take a very close look at what is truly going on and recognize that our country does have the capacity to provide humanitarian aid to many people, and that the numbers that we're seeing are not something that people should be afraid of. I think it's their numbers that we are seeing means that we just need to turn our lens a little bit and recognize that people need to be welcomed with dignity and be able to seek protection under our laws. Not everybody arriving at the southern border will be able to remain in the United States. That is 100% truthful. But people that do qualify for asylum should have the ability to seek asylum in the United States. And so I'm hopeful that the public in America can really look at the truth of this situation and recognize that these people are seeking protection under our laws and nothing more than that.
What I think I hear you saying as well is that wealthy nations like the U.S. have not only the ability, but the duty to provide humanitarian aid to other parts of the world.
That is what I'm saying. The United States has been a leader in humanitarian relief for a long time, including our refugee policy, which is different than asylum. Refugees are deemed refugees by the United Nations, and then the United Nations looks for countries where refugees can be admitted. The United States basically closes doors to most refugees under the Trump administration. Biden is opening the doors a little bit more to that, but we do have a duty. And many studies have shown that refugees arriving in the United States only help. There are mayors in the United States that are seeking to welcome refugees into their cities because they know that the cities and the American public will only benefit from the arrival of refugees. And that's not how we should, in my opinion, how we should look at it, only to the benefit of the United States. But I think we can also look at it as it's not a harm to the United States.
Well, when you look at cities that are more welcoming, or even the state of Texas that is trying to work in counter to the Biden administration in some aspects of immigration, what do you see there in terms of how at the state level reactions and programs for people who are migrant?
You know, states are obviously going to have different reactions depending on where they're located in the United States. And, you know, us being in Wisconsin, much closer to our northern border, we have different reactions to immigration or different needs for people arriving in the United States than a state like Texas does. But Texas is, you know, it's a border state, and it's a politically a difficult place where there's a lot of different ideas. But I think we all need to just really look at the truth and not be dramatic about the situation and just continue to look at why people are coming, who is coming, and how we can, as a country, really provide humane treatment of people. And again, it doesn't mean everybody's going to be able to come into the United States and remain, but I think we have to truly, as a country, ensure that people are able to access our laws and that we were complying with the laws that Congress created.
Erin Barbado, she directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. She's with us on immigration policy under the Biden administration. What are your priorities for U.S. immigration? Should we reopen our borders to refugees, to foreign workers, asylum applicants? Still time to talk this through. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Erin Barbado this hour, directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School, as we look at the legal challenges of Coming to the U.S., our country hosts more immigrants than others, according to the State Department. Over 1 million people coming every year as permanent legal residents, asylum seekers, refugees, and other immigrant categories. Aaron is with us for 10 more minutes. So, Aaron, I want to get to DACA and Dreamers. And you, in October, UW-Madison plans to open the Center for Dreamers through a grant. What is the center going to do?
Yeah, so we're super grateful that we received the Baldwin, Wisconsin IDEA grant to create the Center for Dreamers at UW. The plan is me, along with the director, Erika Rosales, will implement a center where we will hopefully serve the needs of people with DACA and undocumented people who are seeking higher education in the United States. We will provide legal resources in terms of even representation for people who are seeking DACA initially or renewals, something called advanced parole that would allow people with DACA to travel internationally, as well as really look at whether there are pathways to lawful permanent residency and citizenship through employment-based options for DACA. There's no other organization in Wisconsin that specifically is created to serve the specific needs of this population. So we will also look at mental health services for people with DACA, as well as career and professional counseling. Because of their status or lack of status in the United States, they have very unique pathways to employment at times. And a lot of universities and even high schools don't have the resources to counsel people with DACA in their pursuit of higher education, whether it be an undergraduate career or even a professional career.
So there have been delays in the processing of applications for DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program. The Biden administration is assigning more staff to review applications. What is the current status of this program?
Yeah, the numbers are quite staggering. And we've seen some delays in the renewals that we have been doing and even the initial applications right here in Wisconsin for the people that we work with. But the studies show, the statistics show that on May 31st, USCIS, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, that has jurisdiction over these DACA applications, they had only adjudicated 1,900 of 62,000 initial DACA applications. In addition, As of June, there were 81,000 of these initial applications pending. And then there's also currently 13,000 DACA renewals pending, meaning that many people with DACA are now losing their ability to work because their work permits expire because the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services isn't meeting its 120-day goal of renewing these work permits. So the Biden administration did announce this week that they're going to increase staff and resources to ensure that people are not in limbo again. But it's causing huge burdens to these communities. And it's really disappointing after this community had been in such limbo, political limbo, and under the Trump administration.
What type of advice can you give to someone who is in that limbo, who is, you know, in that backlog? What can they do?
You know, at this point, there's not a lot to be done. There, certain people may be eligible to ask for expedited processing. Congressional representatives, like Tammy Baldwin's office, they have an individual who works on immigration issues. They may be able to help in certain situations, but it is really complicated and the delays are pervasive. And so USCIS has a lot of work to do to ensure that people receive their benefits as soon as possible.
We're talking with Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. Let's go to Marcia now in Amherst. Hi, Marcia. What would you like to bring up?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have question and concern. First of all, I heard that I apologize. I don't remember the speaker's name, but I'm not afraid of illegals. That's not what I am. But it is not our responsibility to take in all the people across the planet. There are probably 7.5 billion. I am really disturbed by the flood, and I think it's rather obscene that illegal people are allowed to cross the border in droves, particularly at the behest and permission of the current administration. I also don't understand, really, please explain it. Why is this all this concern for illegal people rather than American citizens? Primary responsibility goes to American citizens and their needs. There are billions of dollars, including my tax dollars, going to illegal people.
Aaron Barbado, let's get Aaron to respond.
So, first of all, I would encourage people to not use the word illegal when talking about a human being. No human being is illegal. No one is saying that the United States should welcome 9 billion people into the country, but we have laws. And I think that allow people to immigrate to the United States through family, through employment, through humanitarian-based ways. And that's what is going on. And that's what a lot of people are trying to ensure, that our laws are simply being followed, because we should be a leader in humanitarian rights. We absolutely should be looking at protecting and providing for U.S. citizens, 100%. There's no disagreement there. But I think demonizing people and calling them illegal is not going to help the situation. We need to look at really the true numbers and what is going on, and ensure that we are not harming people who are seeking refuge in the United States.
Let's go to Eric now in Green Bay. Hi, Eric.
Yes, hello.
Hi, go ahead.
My question is just for the guests. There's a information gap, as we can see with some of the previous callers, in terms of exactly how these policies work. And I'm just wondering if the guest has any suggestions on where people can become better educated on these policies, whether that's from DACA or just the asylum policy in general. As she noted earlier, asylum is 100% legal. And I think there's, so much misinformation out there with people coming to the country and, crossing at the southern border, not through ports of entry. And that's a totally, as long as they're claiming asylum, they're well within their rights to do that under our current law.
Eric, we're short on time. Aaron, how can we become better educated?
Now, I really appreciate Eric's perspective. I think we have to look at trusted news sources. I mean, it's a very complicated situation. I have to travel outside of Wisconsin to often see what's truly going on and to know what news sources to trust. But I think going at it with an open mind and really looking at and studying what our laws say will go a long way.
And as we wrap up here, when are your plans to return to the border?
I'm planning to return with some students at the end of August. If everything goes smoothly, we should be heading back there for another trip there.
Would you plan on going back to El Paso or somewhere else?
We will be planning to go back to El Paso at this time.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all your listeners for your great questions.
Erin Barbado, she directs the UW Law School's Immigrant Justice Clinic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.